Welcome to the Valley Outdoors, everybody. Glad to have you guys with us. It's going to be a jam-packed show. We've got some news coming out of North Dakota, Don.
Yes.
Impressive. Changing in tournament regulations, and I'll tell you what, when it was instituted a while ago, it was an overreach in my opinion, but hang tight for that. We're also going to talk about some duck surveys for those of you duck hunters out there, see what's going on, and some areas not good, other areas good. So tell you what, stay tuned, that and more when we return.
Does your family need a break from the daily routine?
Hello, I'm Dr. Spruce. If you or someone you know needs a healthy dose of nature, visit discovertheforest.org and trade in the big screen for the big blue sky by visiting a local park or forest near you.
Hiking, picnicking, swimming, orienteering, climbing, admiring wildlife, or inhaling fresh air may result in heightened creativity, feelings of joy, harmony, satisfaction, and a euphoria that can only be explained as oneness with the natural world.
Whoa.
Good to see you, Don.
Yeah, it's good to be seeing
Ava.
I'm here. You're ready to go.
That's exciting.
Hey, you were out in Michigan not that long ago. How did things go?
Good. Had fun.
I didn't get your pictures this time.
You didn't?
Uh-uh.
No, I actually didn't go.
You didn't go?
No, we... I was going to suck you into that one. I was going to say, Don, you're not... I just can't send you those pictures. We actually went right up to about a day and a half beforehand, and the wind was going to come out of the south. Background story, we went earlier in the year to Port Washington.
Yep.
And had a blast.
Yeah, it's nice fish.
Awesome fish. And we planned it out to go again. We got a hotel. My buddy, Raylo from Baitmasters Tanks, he was going out. And we're going to do some testing. We're going to throw a couple sharrows on and see how they ran and do some fishing. Well, the wind was going to come out of the south at 20 to 30 knots. And
that's unfortunate.
And the waves were anywhere from 9 building to 9 plus. And it's literally you can't. There's nowhere to
fish. Second thoughts did you have?
What's that?
Second thoughts?
Yeah. I said, you know, when I was in a tournament, I'd pray that they were going to cancel, but I was already there.
Yeah.
In this case, I don't have to go.
Right.
And I don't have to worry about hanging out at the hotel and waiting to see if it's going to be good enough to go.
Right.
We don't have to go. I don't hate the fish that bad. So It actually was...
There'll be another
being
time.
Being able to choose the wiser of the scenarios. There's nowhere to go. You really don't have anywhere to go when it's that bad. And, you know, you would take somebody that's not experienced in rough water. And it's a good point, really, when it comes down to it, Don. There was a couple of people that are going to come with us that were very inexperienced in that type of fishing. And what happens? You know what would happen.
Yeah.
Take me home.
Yes.
They're gripping the bottom of the boat or in a fetal position. And
they're hanging over the edge.
That too, or partially in and out, and yeah. I'd rather not be part of that because,
right.
You know, the Bucket Brigade has got to be following that program. So, not good, but there's opportunities coming up. Going to Lake of the Woods at the end of the month. Lake of the Woods is on fire right now. Unbelievable. Lindy Riggs, they're up north of Garden, just crushing a fish up there.
North of Garden?
Yeah. And it's that good where the guide boats, the charters...
Are running that far?
They're going.
I'm going to be up there, you know, not too far. Too far out here.
You got to go south.
I have to go south?
Well, yeah. You're.
I'm north. I'm on
Canada,
the north side.
So, yeah.
I just got to scoot over about 20 miles.
Yep. We won't do that. I know you.
No, we've done it.
Have you?
Not as far as Garden, though. No.
Well, I want to jump into something that I thought was rather funny because, as we know, in a lot of political scenarios, government... A pendulum has a tendency to swing one way, and then smarter brains prevail. And in this particular case, that's exactly it. Story comes out of North Dakota, and the National Professional Angler Association it was a number of years ago, they introduced a law that said...
I think this law has been on the books for quite some time.
Quite some time.
Yeah.
And tournaments stopped going to North Dakota. Now, if you think about the economic impact a tournament has when it comes to a town, it's roughly about $2 to $3 million impact between food, lodging, gas, beverages of all types, everything.
Fuel is a big thing.
And residual because you're there for whatever else, right?
Yep.
Well, they instituted a law, and similar laws are like, Don, you hand me the article. In Louisiana, it's illegal to send somebody a surprise pizza that could cost you $500. South Dakota, don't fall asleep in a cheese factory or face a legal backlash. And you can't give a rat as a present in Montana, just so you know. Those are important things.
It's a violation.
Violation. Yeah. That's not good. A law that was instituted in North Dakota said that events like a tournament had to pay 75% of the gross receipts back to the participants. Okay, that's not so bad, right? The payback to the people,
right,
which is fine. I'm all over that because that's a...
You're
okay
a participant.
Number, right? The problem was 10% of all entry and participation fees went to the state government.
Right.
So you have a state government that's, let's say it's $350,000 purse. $35,000 of the purse is pulled right out of the mix.
It's typically a 2 or a 3 day event.
Yeah. Either way, whatever the purse is, doesn't matter.
Right.
It's $35,000. Well, what it does immediately is it takes money out of the anglers' pockets, at least on the professional side it did. And they said, we can't afford to go there because we're not going to pay out to do it. We bring economic benefit to the state already, mm-hmm. and now you want $35,000 for that. Turns out it was a boat, not conservation fee, they called it. It was a boat ramp fee.
Yeah, well, whatever it was an old law on the books that really kept organized tournaments from their state, therefore losing out on the economic development that they could create.
Yeah, and everybody thought that it was involving replacing resources after a tournament like stocking fish. Turns out it was a boat ramp tax that led to keeping out state anglers out of the state and tournaments from coming and helping North Dakota residents. Garrison, North Dakota, I don't know what the population is. Let's say it's 300.
Right.
The tournament is held in Garrison. The economic impact from, let's say, 300 participants, it's 175 pros, 175 cos, plus you have staff and everything else that comes in, plus the
you double the population.
And the publicity. Yeah. It's like pheasant hunting. Cut off pheasant hunting out of South Dakota. What happens to the state?
Right.
Not good. So they've rescinded that, and I think that's going to be a fantastic move in the right direction. It's gone to now just a $75 permit fee. And they can contribute what they feel is appropriate. So they can contribute whatever they want.
The tournament organization.
Yep.
Yep.
And many of them do. And they have a fund that they do send back to them. So I think it's a great move in the right direction. Again, the pendulum swung too far. They were getting greedy. And it was one person in the state that was in charge of that element that said, this is what we're going to do. And he said, we're going to get so much money. And well, guess what? Doesn't work that way. So
now it's
lost. Yeah, kind of a. I like it. It made me happy. So it's a good story to lead off with. Stay tuned. We're going to be talking a little bit about duck and a survey. How about that? Two words never used before together. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Thanks for hanging out with us, and we really appreciate it if you go check us out. Where, Don?
TheValleyOutdoors.com.
And Facebook as well, so feel free to post up there. I just posted a big picture up there. Did you see it, Don?
Yeah, big pike.
Yeah, that was...
Where'd you get that one?
Lake of the Woods.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's over... It was like 43 or something.
That's stretching it, but...
That was the one that ate the wall. The arms auger
aren't that
I had
long.
On. I had that auger. A pike is 43 inches? That was a,
no, your arms aren't that long.
No, my arms aren't that. I can't stretch the fish that far. Is that what you're trying to tell me?
That's what I'm trying to tell you.
You're such a help, Don.
I know.
You see, it didn't have whiskers, so you didn't really recognize what it was at first.
I watched a video the other day of a young gal
coming up going meow.
She literally was down in a hole. These young gals that they got on Facebook, I don't know why it came up on my feed, and she literally puts her arm all the way through the gills up through the mouth, and when they bring it out,
catfish.
It's a catfish.
Noodling.
Yeah. But she's doing it with her whole arm.
I was going to say, if you do that with a pike, your arm will be shredded. No, the gill rakers are just off the charts. I mean,
I've been there.
It's not good.
I know.
But I think I told you about that story. I had a sauger, and the sun was shining in my back, and all of a sudden from underneath the boat comes this monster pike and just attacked it. Well, I look, and here's this walleye was half in the bag, shall we say. It was not all there on the surface, and it was my fish, but I still had the big pike on my line.
Oh.
It hit it so hard that it knocked the walleye off. It was in its mouth. It came loose.
And it caught him.
And the hook went right into the corner of the mouth of the pike.
Yeah.
And it was in a light wire hook, too. It was in a light slow death hook.
Yep.
That's lucky.
Yeah, that's lucky. I was just thinking about that. I'm tying up some for my next trip. And
that's
I go, if you catch a pike on this, I wonder if you get it in.
It was something.
It's like a piece of wire.
Make sure you put on a little prop blade, though.
Yep.
That really helps. The reason is if you go slower than... it takes about a mile an hour. And trust me, I played with it a lot when I won the tournament on the Wahi. It took me days and days to really perfect the speed. It's about 1 to 1. 1 to 1 is about the best.
Okay.
And bottom bouncer is the best because it keeps it up off the bottom. But doggone it, I'll tell you what, if you went slower than that, it didn't work. And one of the things we did is slowed it down, and the water got cloudy, and I added a little prop blade, a Mac blade, because it is lightweight, but then you can also do those little tiny, you know, the little prop blades,
yep,
the little ones, the metal ones. They work pretty good, but I prefer the Mac blade because you've got different types.
They're almost like a paper.
Yeah, they are. It's like a fiber material.
Yeah.
And the color variances are...
all over the place.
Yeah,
you can get any color you want.
Black and orange is one of the best, kind of a weird black and orange pattern.
It's probably the one I didn't get.
Well, that's why I said that.
I know. You probably saw them in my box.
That's the way it works for fishermen, though.
You know what I mean?
Remember, they catch fishermen, not fish.
You know what cracks me up is you're up in a camp, and we've done a lot of fishing, you way more than I have probably, but there'd be these old guys come up. I mean, the only thing they know is a Lindy Little Joe with a red and white little spinner on it. And they go out and they come back and they've got a stringer full. It's like.
It happens.
Yep.
But I will say, though, that one of the biggest things to.
You notice I said success. Stringer full?
Yeah, I heard you. Yeah. Dangling over the side. Yes. They're all dead, stiff as a board.
Yep.
Yeah. But I will say that one of the biggest things is not getting stuck. The last trip up, I was running all small stuff, right? And real small spinners. And I said, well, you know what? Let's change it up for fun. And I put the real big Mac blade on it, and it wobbled the slow death because it was short enough to create a movement that was off the charts. Lit them up.
Really?
Totally different movement.
Yeah, I've got several sizes of the prop ones.
Yeah, but the Mac really gives it kind of that, and that, trust me, they're not a sponsor by any means. I just was amazed at how well changing that up works.
Yeah, well, I'm tying up a bunch of them now, so.
Yeah, fluorocarbon.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with fluorocarbon, you know, I always talk about it sinks.
It sinks.
But I'm only running a 20, maybe a 28-inch lead, so
it's not. You ever put a float on it?
Not on that, no.
No?
It gets too big. I know they make them that you can put floats on. I like it just about.
I've got the real small, spinner, like missile floats. They're real narrow. They're not bulky.
No, I like to have the spinners closer to the crawler.
Okay.
As an attractant.
Okay.
And then really making sure that you adjust that crawler so that it kind of comes down and around the curve of the hook.
Right.
That's going to give it the rotation.
The roll.
At the minimum speeds. Mm-hmm. If it does a flat spin on this,
yep,
instead of the roll, the flat just rotation doesn't do it. It's got to have
the wop, wop, wop.
Yep. Big difference. Big difference. All right. So getting the story before we got sidetracked. It's fun to talk fishing.
Yeah.
I don't know. What can you say? An annual survey just came out indicating that there is a decline in waterfowl populations across North America. Take a look at what the scenarios are. This spring, the American and Canadian federal biologists flew transects, which is trying to dissecting different areas throughout North Central U.S., Alaska, and Canada to record waterfowl distribution and abundance. In all, the numbers reported in the survey are based on the data they collected, but they extrapolated it to 2 million square miles of flyways and breeding grounds. So in other words, they measured a small area and then used that as a basis for what they feel would be the appropriate incorporation of the rest of North America. So it's a scientific methodology. Overall, duck and goose populations are down, but doesn't necessarily mean your waterfowl season is shot. The survey shows an interesting spread, I guess, is the way to look at it. If you look at Alaska and Yukon, numbers are down 48%.
Which is in total?
In total, yep. Below the long-term average, yep. If you look at Saskatchewan and northern Manitoba, they're down about 8%. The eastern Dakotas, they're up 12%. And Montana and the western Dakotas, 23% up.
So the Midwest should be in pretty fair shape.
As long as you get water.
Central flyway.
As long as you get water. In terms of mallards and northern pintails, they took the biggest hits, 23% and 43% below their long-term averages, respectively. Our pintails are at a 24% population increase from 2022.
Wow.
So demonstrating that the time population rebounds require and the necessity of yearly monitoring. You really have to look at it every year in order to get an idea of what's going on. Big issues, drought in the Prairie Pothole region. An important metric is the total pond estimates, which reflects how wet the Prairie Pothole region of Dakotas and Canada is. This year, the estimates 5 million ponds, which is 9% lower than in 2022, 5% lower than the long-term average, and around at 9 or 10 of there being some degree of drought across the prairie landscape. So year 9 or 10, drought. So impacts on hunting, seasonal regulations based on the data from the annual survey informs us this year that another component will be regulation and setting age class data obtained from hunters from the prior season. So all in all, I don't know.
It's going to fluctuate no matter what. So
yep. Conservation is a long, it's a
long-term
program. It's not a short-term deal. Harvest quotas might be based on survey numbers, but the management, the game of years and decades. And I think we've seen that a lot. And I think we have to be careful of the knee-jerk reactions that oftentimes happen, Don. You've seen it. You look at regulations and people cry. It's like, how come this or how come that? Well, I think the important thing is, too, in any scenarios, to look at what is going on in a global perspective and then drill down to your specific areas and really get an idea of what's happening. So, well, tell you what, we are going to be right back, and we're going to talk a little bit about some people are really worried about fishing and hunting on the East Coast with some regulations that are leaning towards the green side of things. Hang tight. We'll be right back. Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors Radio Show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference. Don?
Yeah.
You know, it's always one of those... The conversation, it's always fun to talk fishing, and we kind of ramble.
Sometimes, yes.
Sometimes it has a tendency to do that.
Yeah.
You know.
But I spare everybody. I spare the rambling.
Well, till we get to deer hunting.
Yeah.
Or pheasant hunting. We haven't talked pheasant hunting this year. We need to do that. We need to find out what's going on in South Dakota.
Yeah.
Next show.
Yeah. I did see some indicators. Of course, we know how they count.
They have a Creel survey.
mail carriers.
Yeah, well, they count 1 mile.
Mm-hmm. That they do. I've looked at this story in what I do with Charo and dealing with customers out on the East Coast a lot in the conversations with them. And this is becoming a major, major point of contention, to say the least. Experts are fearing the American fishing industry and boating are at risk as the current administration prioritizes climate and green energy. The proposed government regulations have the potential to put an end to the American fishing industry, experts predict. And again, this is at this point, it's on the coastal area on the East Coast. The administration's prioritized green energy and the expanse of endangered whales and the U.S. fishing industry with regulations that limit both commercial fishing and recreational boating. The Vessel Strike Reduction Rule is a new rule proposed by the administration Commerce Department in a partnership with the NOAA, or the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, that would limit the speed of all motorboats over 35 feet from Florida to Massachusetts to 11.5 miles an hour. For up to 7 months of the year, the rule is marketed as a way to protect the endangered right whale, but fishing experts and anglers say the move would have far-reaching implications for their industry. One of the largest producers of trader and seafood, frozen seafood, on the East Coast said that the complexities behind fishing that require anglers to know where they can go and what they're allowed to do in that area, it's a difficult thing. It's funny because we joke you need a new law degree to go fishing, but that's actually the level of regulation that commercial fishermen are held to. Regulations have not stopped, and they've gotten a multitude of other regulations on top of regulations. I was out fishing out on the East Coast earlier this year with one of the customers. They basically want to put offshore wind on most of the areas in federal waters where we fish. Okay. Instead of allowing the domestic industry to grow, offshore wind, which I'll just say it's the biggest threat to the commercial fishing industry in the United States that exists today, and is being pumped up and pushed out on steroids by the administration in a ready, shoot, aim policy that's not only taking commercial fishermen into account, it's not taking commercial fishermen into account, but the ocean itself and all the denizens of the ocean. So really, Don, what's going on here? Is the regulations to try and stop a whale from being injured. The problem is that we're seeing a lot more whales, and you've seen the reports, we're talking about it off air, where there's whales coming up that aren't from strikes, but it's from their beaching because of a lot of the frequencies that are being pulled off of and the electronics, the electrical cabling that's going underneath the water from those
wind farms.
Recently, the Maine lobsterman won a federal court ruling after it sued the National Marine Fisheries Service over a rule that said that it was aimed at protecting the right whale, but lobstermen argued that it would simply put family-owned businesses out of business. They targeted, federal rules targeted recreational fishing and boating, and it was not in a good way either.
Is this targeted at commercial fishermen only or everybody in a boat?
Everybody in a boat.
Wow.
Yeah. They worry the conservation funding will be depleted as a result of the industry being stalled out. It's crazy, Don. It's intense, and nobody cares because the government is just going to do what the wind developers are told to do. The offshore wind developers, many of them are owned by foreign governments. So it's foreign governments sometimes that are telling our current administration what to do, to the detriment of the U.S. fishing groups and the fishermen.
Well, the whole industry, the boating industry.
Exactly right. And the rapid expansion of offshore wind, whatever, the consequence, has been the greatest threat to commercial fishing, particularly on the East Coast. And if everything goes in that they want to go in, you'll be buying all your seafood from China in 20 years. I can tell you that because we're not going to operate a wind farm, and offshore wind has the potential to completely annihilate everything, essentially. And what I find that follows into it is recreational boating at that side of the fence as well also will be eliminated if the 11-mile-an-hour rule is in place. Is that not crazy?
Well, I mean, I'm sure there's a whole lot more to the story, but it sure on the surface seems quite far-fetched.
Is. Let's jump into a fun story that I think is really kind of cool. New Hunter Access Program was launched in South Dakota. Kind of neat deal. Yeah. Public Access to Habitat, or the PATH program. It's a partnership driven to boost access to areas and new upland habitat, and for areas that are enrolled in the long-term conservation programs across South Dakota. $250,000 commitment from digital mapping company Onyx and the South Dakota Department of Tourism is providing initial funding for the program. The goal is to create new public access to 10,000 acres of quality habitat. Long story short, Pheasants Forever is working with these guys. I'd read the article, and it's pretty amazing. The goal is launch is going to happen September 1st. Landowners have an opportunity to enroll eligible acres before the start of the hunting season, pheasant hunting, which opens October 21st. But
is that only for upland game, or is it for the deer season?
It's going to be basically areas that are open to public access.
Public hunting. Okay.
So, really cool story. We'll have some more on that as the season goes along here. But thanks for joining us, everybody. Appreciate it. Ava, Don, always good to hang out with you guys. Thanks for joining us. Next week will be fun. I hope everybody has a fantastic Labor Day weekend. Should be good. Have a good one. See you. Bye.